And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
The Phil Hay Show.
Hello, welcome to The Phil Hay Show, brought to you by The Athletic and The Square Ball. Dan here, along with Michael from The Square Ball. Phil Hay will be along in a short while, but it is actually his week off this week, isn't it? So we've been left in charge, like the kids left at home when the parents go on holiday. So we've got to be grown up and sensible on this show.
Oh dear. We'll see how it goes anyway.
Wish us luck. Yeah, Phil will be checking in shortly to talk about Scoobs. Just a reminder, The Phil Hay Show is twice a week, Mondays and Fridays at the minute. Friday edition is normally where we react to the press conference, which we'll get into in just a minute or two. Actually, Monday show is where we react to the game that's been on at the weekend. I'll be back with Phil on Monday to talk about the Everton game. We'll be previewing Everton momentarily. A reminder that these shows are free. You can listen ad-free, though, when you subscribe to The Athletic. On top of the ad-free pods, you can get every single word that Phil writes about Leeds, and you can participate in the match day discussions with the great man himself, theathletic.com/Leeds pod. So following the Scoobs press conference then, he's saying all the right things, isn't he? He's coming across very, very well, I think.
I think so. He's not taking many risks in the stuff he's saying, but equally, you know, it'd be very easy to just let your mouth run in these situations, I think, as we've maybe found in the past with some other people, that if you're asked a question, you feel the need to fill a lot of space, whereas he's hit everything with a very straight bat, hasn't he? It's just been, well, it's a good opportunity. I'm just trying to help the club.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I went onto the YouTube feed for this to watch it back, and it was 22 minutes, and I thought, oh, maybe he's said a little bit more this week than perhaps he did last week. But I read like the first 6 or 7 minutes are all just the videos coming soon, like holding screen, and he came on, he was succinct, and there were 5 minutes at the end where it was the thank you for watching screen. So yeah, he's a man of few words, but I think the words he's choosing are right. And one of the big takeaways for me is that he's talking about a very positive dressing room at the minute. They're looking forward to the games at the weekend and see them as an opportunity rather than a burden or on the necessarily feeling the pressure.
I think he was quite good, actually. And it was Chris Dawkes from Callander asked the question about if he's been overwhelmed with it. And it would have been, I think it's easy when you're answering a question to almost agree with the question in some ways. But he was polite, but he sort of went, no, I'm not overwhelmed. It's fine. I've got good staff around me. I've been coaching for a very long time. The players are good with me. I like working with them. They like working with me. Perfect. And I think it was good that he came out and said that, because it would have been easy to go, yeah, it's been a lot, but you know, I'm just trying my best. But he went, no, actually, it's fine. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, and spoiler alert, when Phil comes on the line in a bit, which we've already recorded, but you will be hearing it out of order, Phil talks about Scoob simplifying the game. And that's what he did in the response to that question, wasn't it? Which was, look, it's a game of football to prepare for. That's my job. I've been doing that for many, many years. It's just another one of those, albeit on a completely different scale in terms of platform. But it doesn't seem to be phasing him at all, does it?
No, I don't think so. And I think we've seen that in the match day stuff as well. He seems in control of it. He did mention the substitutions, which I guess are the one mark against him at this stage, that people said the substitutions against Man United at home didn't particularly work, which I guess the result would tell you. But he did mention that today. But again, I would say played it down fairly well.
Yeah, he was asked about it specifically, wasn't it? Is it something you've discussed? And he didn't answer directly, but he said, look, there are always conversations, particularly with the senior players, because it was mentioned about reactions from both. It was Ayling and Bamford, wasn't it, who, mm-hmm. when we said there was a reaction, it wasn't a massive negative reaction, but it kind of been a, really? Kind of a thing. I think Bamford was taken off perhaps sooner than he expected to be, if at all.
Yeah, it wasn't quite Tony Yeboah wanging his shirt and storming off down the tunnel, was it? But yeah, I think there was a bit of surprise there. Maybe because I guess Bamford maybe thought he had a little bit more to in the tank still to offer at that stage.
And seeing the Everton game was a chance to get another 3 points. And he was speaking about the belief and the confidence gained from good performances against Man United and positive feelings within the camp as well, particularly a strong second half against Man United in the return, like the game at Elland Road most recently. We need to tidy up some things, is what he said, which was as close as you got to addressing anything sort of specifically tactical. I mean, what do you think we need to tidy up?
Tidy the ball into their net when we were dominant. I mean, the start of the second half against Man United, that was the time we needed to score. We had a very good opening to that, and there were some trying to think if there were any brilliant chances. It felt like there were several half chances in there, but the amount of pressure we had.
We were dominant, weren't we?
Trying to turn those into actual goals has been, which I suppose in some ways has been the story of the season, hasn't it? That we've had a lot of the ball in games, but I guess against a team at the top of the league, you don't necessarily expect to have those periods, and we most definitely did against Man United. It was a game that could have gone in our way had we just managed to grab something in that period. Having failed to get a goal then, I suppose that's where we made the changes, and then Man United made changes too. We can't ignore that, and that's when they came back into it.
Mm. Yeah, injuries-wise, you ran through the situation as it stands. Strauch back in training, which will be the post-concussion protocols, will allow him back into contention. Do you stick with Junior Firpo?
I think I would, you know.
This one.
If it was early season Strauch, I would have put him back in probably, but he's had a tough month or so, I think, before his concussion. So I think Firpo had his best game for us so far. So yeah, I would stick with him.
And no matter what your opinion on him, he is ostensibly a left back, which is what we've been crying out for. So maybe he was there all along. Maybe he just needed the structure to fit into that suits him a lot better.
I mean, possibly. He was here under Bielsa and it never really worked then either. So whether or not it was, it was the stop clock, his performance against Man United, and we'll be back to the Junior Firpo we've become accustomed to against
Everton.
Were you
going to say no one loved then?
Almost. Stopped short of that. He's been a frustrating presence, hasn't he? But equally, he has never had a run of games. When he's been in and out of the team, it's been not because he's been dropped, but generally because he's started to get a run of games and then he's been injured and then he's out for another 5 or 6 weeks. And then by the time he comes back in, he's not established. And it feels like he's never had a good run, for as much as his form has also never been particularly good.
And do you think this maybe is going to be a battle that is won and lost in midfield? I mean, we should say as well, we have previewed this game ourselves on our own podcast that we released yesterday. So we apologize if we double up on any of it. We'll take a slightly different tack in a moment or two. We did go quite off-piste with that as well and ended up talking about 90s pop for a bit. But in terms of the way that Dyche sets his teams up, physicality was mentioned, aggressiveness was mentioned as well by Skubala, and it sounds like he's enjoying having McKennie and Adams in our midfield perhaps to come up against that. I guess they've come in at the right time, haven't they? It adds a certain amount of grit to the midfield.
I mean, that was something we picked up on our show about it, was that the midfield looks kind of interesting because Dyche has got three quite physical players in there and we now have a couple of physical players in, so it'll be interesting to see how that balances. So I mean, we said we recorded that ahead of Skubala, so I think really we're seeing all the same stuff, aren't we? We're more or less coaches.
And interesting to compare last season's teams in this fixture, because I think it's one of those things in it that's kind of instilling the fear in so many people, is what happened last time out, when it probably was it one of the main catalysts for things going wrong under Bielsa? And I ask this specifically because we'll get around to what happened in that game in a second, but Dominic Calvert-Lewin is out of this game. We know that from Dyche's press conference on Thursday. And he's been moaning about the lack of striking. I say moaning, it's perhaps not fair, but he's complained about the imbalance of the squad there and suggested that maybe there are not enough strikers in the squad there. But it is interesting to compare the teams and see what went out last year. And that's off the back of, was it the three? It was the 1-0 Rafinha the season before, wasn't it, in the red wine kit? And then last season was the mashup kit with the luminous socks, when it went sort of badly wrong, didn't it? We had Dan James up front. Stuart Dallas was off after 10 minutes. Yelda came on, who also then went off injured later on. It was the one where Rodrigo and Rafinha were both subbed off at halftime, which, if you're to believe the stories, kicked off all the behind-the-scenes stuff with players not being entirely happy with Bielsa. Forshaw and Roberts coming on at halftime for two of our biggest signings since promotion. So it was not a happy day, was it?
It wasn't. And we had a few of these under Bielsa. I think the earliest one last season was Southampton away, which was a similar performance in a way, that we turned up and from the off, nothing was there. It just didn't feel like the team we'd become accustomed to watching. So
it's one of those things where we have said, don't we, you could always tell which way a Bielsa game was going to go in the opening 10 minutes, and that was one of them.
Yeah, and I think there were a couple of goals up in the first half and we never looked like turning that game around. And I think around this time as well, you obviously had Donny van der Beek playing for them in midfield, and it was around the debate at the time of whether or not we should have tried to get him in should have got a midfielder in. And as the injuries piled up, even within this game, and he was playing really well against us, there was a slight dread of like, oh my God, we've completely missed the boat here, and they've done the right thing and strengthened. Now, obviously, a year on, well, not quite a year on, they've offloaded Dele Alli, who they had around this time as well. Van der Beek's gone back for Man United, and they're, you know, they're in a shambolic state, more or less.
Can you remember who was holding midfielder in this game? Because we've got Koch, Llorente and Strauch there all playing. So was it Strauch in midfield, or was it Koch that he'd moved forward, perhaps? Because I don't see any discernible deep line midfielder in that team, because you got Dallas, say, went off injured, and it was Click and Rodrigo in front of whoever was holding, and that it never seemed to work, that pairing of Rodrigo and Click. Rodrigo operating as like something of a number 10.
Yeah, without Calvin, it quite regularly didn't work, did it, in the midfield? So we're not got that to worry about anymore.
No, that's true. I mean, that problem solved.
But we it'll be a completely different game, won't it? And I mean, obviously Lampard and Bielsa are gone as well, so it'll be an interesting battle, one that I probably didn't envisage a few weeks ago.
No. So. Well, there are at least six changes that we'll have from that side, perhaps even seven or more, depending on what happens with Strauch. Because the team that day was Melier, you had Llorente, Koch, Strauch, Ayling, Click, Dallas, Rafinha, Rodrigo, Harrison, and James was up front. So take James out, Rodrigo's out, Rafinha's out, Click's gone, Dallas is injured, Llorente's gone. So that's your six. If Strauch is out, that's seven. So it's pretty big changes. Also reflected on their side of the fence as well. If you look particularly at their attack and their midfield, it's decimated. You've got at least five missing, including Richarlison and Dominic Calvert-Lewin up front. Behind them, you've got Anthony Gordon, who was always a bit of a thorn in our side, I thought, particularly in the home fixture earlier in the season, but also over there he was troublesome, wasn't he? Running from deep with Alan, not in the midfield, or Van der Beek, as you mentioned. So interesting to see how that all pans out.
If you compare the two, our team looks a lot stronger. You'd have to say theirs looks at least a bit weaker. So it should be okay.
It sounds like you're trying to convince yourself. Yeah, if the game was played on paper, then you would have to fancy us, wouldn't you? Nonto, perhaps getting a bit more change out of them, you'd hope, wouldn't you?
Well, Coleman has been a very good player over the years, but is now getting on a bit. Not an awful lot of pace at centre-back for them either, so you'd think there's some options to maybe try and get in behind him a bit there and run at them. Equally, I feel we're about as likely to get Tarkowski booting Nonto in the stands and injuring him within the first few minutes as well. So let's protect our good young players as well.
I mean, considering it's almost exactly a year to the week that that this happened, a lot has changed. I mean, a week is a long time in football, as the cliche goes, but a year feels like a blooming lifetime, doesn't it, when you look at these sides.
Are we going to miss Frank Lampard?
Might as well save that for our show.
It gave a bit of spice to the game, I suppose, didn't it? Whereas Deitch, I suppose I didn't particularly enjoy playing his Burnley teams. I mean, the start of last season was the 1-1, wasn't it, there when we weren't particularly great. But I feel like we've probably just about had the better of Deitch under Bielsa.
Well, it does beg the question of whether, and it's the problem we've seen, you know, we're trying to get a manager in mid-season and in the end Scoops has got it, of instilling a new tactical plan. And you saw it work pretty effectively against Arsenal for them, but they didn't pull up any trees against Liverpool, albeit they had that chance just before Liverpool scored, but it was quite comfortable for Liverpool in the end, wasn't it? So is that difficult for him to get consistency out of this team?
Consistency, I think, should be easier for them, because this is going to sound like I'm doing Deitch's tactics down, but it is a more simple game. So it shouldn't, I don't expect them to be radically different in any game they play. I think they'll set up the pressing and stuff slightly differently depending on who they're playing, and maybe they'll be on the front foot more depending on probably being at home in this game. I think there's definitely going to be an expectation that they win this from their fans. So there'll be a slight setup difference there, but I get the feeling they probably have worked an awful lot on the shape and setting up to be tight and structurally sound, which will be, I suppose, Lampard used to always say he was doing that. before blaming the players for not doing that.
Take him at his word, Michael. Take him at his word.
And I guess Marsh used to spend a lot of time saying he was doing that and then it not happening. So let's see if this is really, as a game, just a balance of whether or not Skubala and Deitch are better than Lampard and Marsh.
I mean, just going back to Scoobs, when it was put to him, you know, these are two huge games, are they season defining? And he was keen to play that down, saying, look, we've got a lot of games to go. Obviously, we need to pick up points, but they are huge games, but the players are excited.
I feel like we've had a lot of games this year where we've been must win, and then we've drawn them, and you go, oh, okay.
And with it ticking
it's
on.
Neither here nor there.
But it's sort of do or die time now, isn't it? And as we said, I think on our show, that like a draw is not the worst result in the world, but a win does so much because it's so needed.
A draw is probably more of a problem for Everton than for us, I would say, because we are above them there at home, and they do need to start picking up a bit of momentum at some point, whereas a draw for us, I don't think it really does much damage to morale for us. It doesn't a draw at this stage, particularly if we can follow it up with a win against Southampton. but it's all ifs and buts.
Yeah, it is. And just on Dyche himself, Scoop said today, met him a couple of times. He probably doesn't remember me, which I thought was
I felt sorry for him.
Very self-effacing, though. But they're both children of John Duncan in the footballing sense, having been schooled by him. Is he the guy from Chesterfield, John Duncan?
He is, yeah. And he was at the, I guess they maybe met at the, he was associated with the League Managers Association as well. He was involved with that. So I guess that is maybe where they've managed to meet each other.
So it was John Duncan who, did he oversee the big Chesterfield Cup run where they got to the semi-final against Middlesbrough?
Yeah, where Dyche scored a penalty.
Ah.
He did, yeah, I think he got the, was it at Wembley, I think? Or maybe in somewhere else, maybe a neutral ground, the semi-final. But yeah, Dyche got a penalty in that, I think.
It was Old Trafford, wasn't it? Old Trafford.
Yeah, I think Wembley was probably being rebuilt at that stage. Who knows? Yeah, or maybe they'd just been sensible and not played every single game there.
But I couldn't tell you what his style was necessarily about because it was a long while ago. But it's interesting that there are links back there and that Skubala was able to say, well, I know a little bit about his style of football. So it'll be interesting to see how that stacks up against the old futsal stylings of Skubala. I do wonder as well how that's kind of translated from the smaller game to what he's telling the players now. If it's the same skill set or if it's completely different.
Yeah, I mean, obviously tactically it's got to be completely different. It's more about the touch and the technique, I suppose, isn't it? The smaller-sided game. So yeah, it's interesting. I mean, he does know 11-a-side football as well and has worked in that. But yeah, to go from it's an interesting career trajectory to have gone from that. Because I mean, him even being put in charge of the under-21s when he was at the start of the season, there were some eyebrows raised about the fact we were getting a futsal coach.
And here we are.
And here we are with him. With him in charge for the foreseeable future, or however they chose to phrase it the other day.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And as if by magic, Phil joins us now on the Phil Hayes Show. Nice to have you appearing on your own show, Phil. Sorry for interrupting your week off during the school holidays.
I thought I should show up anyway, since it is mine.
Absolutely. We're here to talk about Scoobs. Just to timestamp this, as we like to do with this show, we are recording this before the press conference ahead of the Everton game. So we're not going to talk about matters necessarily about what's happening there on the pitch at the weekend. But the situation in general, Phil, it's been a strange old week at Leeds, hasn't it? Going right back to the rejection of Schroeder and the appointment of Scoobs.
Yeah, it has. I mean, we almost don't need to timestamp this in as much as we know that Skubala and Gallardo, Chris Armas are going to be caretakers now. Certainly, I would expect for Everton and Southampton, and I think if those games go to plan, then beyond and most likely to the end of the season, given how few games are left, I think if those games don't go to plan and the league table worsens, then I'm not sure we're done with this yet. But it's been, I mean, not even just from Schroeder onwards, it's been a strange fortnight, thinking initially that they had a very strong chance of Andoni Iriola over at Rayo Vallecano. Clubs certainly thought they did. And then other options in the background that made it seem as if one way or another they were going to fall on somebody who would be a permanent appointment and not interim, not caretaker, somebody who would hopefully see them through the back end of this season and then start to properly build in the way that coaches try to from the summer onwards. In terms of the appointment of Skubala, it makes sense to me as an alternative to somebody like Schroeder, partly on the basis of Schroeder's recent record, what happened to him at Ajax, but also on the basis of the reaction to the news last weekend that it looked like it was going to be Schroeder who was coming in until the end of the season. And I know there's been a bit of muddy of waters in the sense of how close was it and everything else. What we know is that he was at the team hotel before the game. He was at the game itself against Manchester United. He was seen walking around the pitch afterwards. I don't think there's any doubt that had there been, or I don't think there's much doubt that had there not been the reaction that there was and had Leeds not found had the motivation to think again about it, that it's highly likely that he would have been appointed and would be here to the end of the season. But in the circumstances, and considering what the mood was like in reaction to that, I do think Skubala makes far more sense. That said, it's a huge risk, this. It's a huge risk to be in this situation with a caretaker team when you're 17th. I don't think it's the scenario Leeds wanted at all. I don't think it's what they envisaged at the beginning of last week when they sacked Jesse Marsh. And it has to work, because if it doesn't, then they're going to be in deep trouble. And if it doesn't, then there is a high likelihood that they'll go down.
Where does the sensitivity come from all of a sudden to fan opinion? Because, you know, the fans have been shouting to buy a left-back, buy a striker for about 2 years, and they've managed to ignore that. Do you think the club realised that they're in a very dangerous place at the moment with fan opinion?
I think it's partly that. I mean, the club will say that that wasn't what influenced it in the end, that in the end they hadn't actually decided to appoint him and they decided to look elsewhere. But I think it seems fairly implausible that you would approach somebody like Schreuder, far more experienced than Skubala, have him over in Leeds, speak to him, hold those sort of conversations if you weren't seriously thinking about appointing him. I think there's a big difference between a team that looks lopsided or not quite complete in terms of balance because it doesn't have a left back, and a squad en masse who look like they might be getting relegated. And, you know, this has become such a key decision. And we're finding out a few things with this, which don't come as a particular surprise. One is that this time of year is not a great time to be trying to recruit a head coach at all. The second is that at this time of year, it's difficult to talk other head coaches out of jobs at other clubs, and sometimes, more to the point, it's very difficult to persuade other clubs to negotiate with you when it comes to releasing them. And I cannot help but feel, to go back to a discussion we've had a few times now, that they've left this too late. You know, they've left the decision with Marsh too late, and I understand why there was an attempt to give him as much time as possible, to give him the players he needed to try and make it work with him. But what has happened is that they've hit the second week of February, too close to the end of the season to have your pick of whoever's out there. And it's been a struggle to get anybody. It's been a struggle to get anybody on the initial shortlist who they genuinely wanted and who they thought would be right for them. So it is Skubala. I've got to say, actually, with Skubala, I thought his work, the work he did for the Manchester United games was good. I did. I don't think in the second game the substitutions and the changes worked at all. I think Skubala admitted that himself afterwards. And I do think that in the last half hour at Old Trafford, there was a definite loss of impetus and definite loss of momentum, although you have to credit to some extent, I think, the changes that Ten Hag made at that point in the game. So I don't think that Skubala feels like an unsafe pair of hands. I think he's probably shown in those two games that he can coach and he can plan. And I think as well that he's got players who will respond to him to some degree. But this is different now. You know, there's a big difference between taking two games in a week because the club are trying to find a head coach and suddenly being thrust with the task of effectively keeping Leeds up, you know, which is on him now, certainly in the shorter term. And that does change the dynamic. It does change the strain that he'll be under, the exposure that he's going to face, the scrutiny that's going to come around because of the fact that Leeds desperately, desperately needs results at this stage. It's a gamble. I don't think the club can deny that it's a gamble.
I think embracing the size of that risk, what is it that's made them embrace the size of that risk then? Do you think it's just that they've painted themselves into a corner? Or is there any sort of level of choice in this, in your opinion?
I think it's probably a case of the alternatives that are out there. If they can't do Areola, and if they can't do Arne Slot, and if they can't persuade Marcelo Gallardo to come into a job mid-season, everything that's been said about Gallardo, and I know that Southampton had this conversation about him as well, is that he wants to take his next job after River Plate with a full season ahead of him. And I totally understand why. And even more so if he's coming to Europe, coming to England, you know, you want the benefit of having 3 weeks of pre-season to be able to do properly what it is that you want to do. I don't think Gallardo's case, there's much appeal in coming in and firefighting in what is a pretty desperate situation. So you then start to move on to the coaches you could have who are out of work. And you know, as with Southampton going for Jesse Marsh, which doesn't look now like it is going to happen, did look very, very promising for them in terms of actually making that appointment on Tuesday, but it's fallen through in the past 24 hours and doesn't look like it'll be resurrected. You do start to pick from the people who are out of work, people who are available. And as we've said previously, people who are out of work tend to be, by virtue of the fact that they've either lost a job previously or have been out of work for a while. So it doesn't necessarily give you a broad range of people who you particularly want or you particularly trust. Clearly last weekend, it was decided or it was felt that Schreuder might be the answer for them, certainly in the short term. I'd have been very surprised had he joined the club, had it been anything other than an initial appointment to the end of the season. But I think in the absence of being able to do that, and in the absence of anybody else who clearly floats the boat, they've obviously looked at Skibala's work last week and thought, well, you know, this is probably as safe a decision as anything else. Time's going to tell on that front. And, you know, time's not going to be very forgiving at all if this doesn't work. But as I say, I think to give Skubala his due, I do think he did good things with the Manchester United games last week. I think they went better than they could have done.
How did we land on Troider in the first place? We know Victor Alter had been chatting to Marsh for, well, years, it turned out, in the end. Is this someone he's known for a while?
I think he does know Schreuder, yeah. But it seemed to me that it became an option towards the end of the week, last week, when it was apparent that Areola wasn't going to be coming out of Rayo Vallecano. We talked on the previous podcast, or I think it was last week's, about almost the need for, because of the way release clauses are structured in Spain, almost the need for Areola to start that fight himself, you know, and to say, look, I want to leave and I'm going to make it happen, and force his way out. And it just didn't seem that he was prepared to do that. I think he wanted it to happen in a way that was respectful and you know, didn't drop Rayo Vallecano in it. And I do think if Leeds stay up, that's absolutely an option they'll revisit in the summer again, likewise with Arne Slot. But Slot as well, you know, at final, very resistant to the idea of going to Leeds. And he said himself publicly that he wouldn't be. Although, you know, the way in which Leeds approached that and the fact that you know, Otto was in Amsterdam, was in Holland, suggests to you that at some level Slot was potentially interested in the post. So again, perhaps at a later date, that's one they can go back to. But Schreuder seemed to appear over the weekend as, you know, a bit of a fallback option, a bit of a case of, we can't get anybody permanently that we want. Who is out there? Who can we go for? He might do well. He's flown in. The reaction has been really, really negative. And whether Leeds say that was an influencing factor or not, as we said, you know, those are really, really difficult circumstances to take over in. And, you know, to an extent, I feel a little bit sorry for Schreuder, because he's flown in. That's been the response to it. And you know as well as I do that had he taken the job amid a load of scepticism, gone to Goodison Park and lost, it would not have been pretty at the weekend at all.
You could say that of anybody, couldn't you? But like, the interim gig is a tough sell. When you actually step back from it and think about it, it's such a tough sell to say, we want you to come in and be in charge of all this, but just for a little while, not permanently.
It is, but people have different levels of stock, don't they? And I think with Schreuder, you were talking about somebody who was no more than 3 weeks out of the job at Ajax, having not done particularly well there and been sacked. And, you know, in these circumstances, you have to kind of be prepared to cut your cloth. But I think it helps in the view of the fan base to see somebody coming through the door who you 100% trust, you know, even if it doesn't work, an appointment that you think that's, you know, that's a kind of steady call, in the way that some clubs used to look at Allardyce. You know, the circumstances where somebody like Allardyce would keep you up, or, for example, in the Championship, Warnock, who's gone back to Huddersfield Town, although I think that's going to be an extremely difficult job for him to keep them up. But he has done it before. So, you know, if you think of the other clubs that he's gone into, Cardiff, Rotherham, those clubs taking Warnock, fan bases probably say, well, this makes sense in the circumstances. I'm totally not saying that Warnock should have been under consideration for this, because he shouldn't. But if you've got an interim boss coming in who you trust and who you think is going to do the job for you, then the fan base will warm to that and will accept it. I think the issue with Schreuder was that people were looking at his record and saying, I don't understand why it is, given the names that have been touted and given, you know, the way that this was portrayed at the start of Leeds trying to find somebody long-term, people struggling to understand why it was that this was the person, this was the coach that they were falling on.
Warnock would have been a great stalking horse to get Schreuder in, actually. Put him out there. Oh, we've decided not to go with Warnock, actually. This guy's been at Ajax. He's surely an improvement.
Ultimate strategy, yeah.
And looking at Skubala in terms of what he does bring, he's a known quantity to the players, isn't he? He's a face around the club that's not coming in with absolutely brand new ideas. And I guess there is a risk, actually, baked into the idea of bringing in an interim manager who has new ideas and then trying to communicate them and get them across in such a short space of time.
Yeah, I've been asking quite a lot about what Skubala's doing, you know, how he's approaching this. And everything that's getting said seems to be coming down to simplification. I mean, Marsh did not have the same training week that Bielsa did. Bielsa's training weeks were hugely intense and, you know, never really eased off. There was never any gap in it. There was never much of a break. Long analysis sessions, and for a long time it worked really effectively. Marsh's weeks tended to be a bit more structured, in the sense that 2 days before a game, for example, it would be fairly low-key, it'd be fairly gentle, just to let the players' legs recover a bit more. Some sessions were purely on set pieces. The analysis wasn't as in-depth or as, you know, I guess as long-winded as some of Bielsa's. But it sounds like Skubala has simplified all of that again. You know, it's not a case of doing the bare minimum, as in tossing it off. It's a case, I think, of trying not to overcomplicate things with the players and trying to make it as basic and simple a kind of plan and a strategy as possible, so that ideally it works as quickly as possible. And I did think, you know, for an hour against Manchester United at Old Trafford, and really for probably 70 minutes as well at Elland Road, they were right in those games. And I didn't think, looking at the two teams man for man, you were seeing a huge amount of difference between them. But, you know, things like getting your substitutions right, things like being able to finish off games when you're in a good position, is going to be absolutely critical now. And I think that's probably what, you know, he's going to be judged on. But, you know, however this goes, I think Skubala is a million miles down the list of people who this is going to be pinned to if it doesn't work out. You know, he's in that situation that you used to see with Redfern, you know, as academy coach, under 21 manager, where you're picking up the pieces and you're agreeing to help. But you can never tell in these circumstances how much they want that to be the case, you know, how much they actually want to be doing this. Interesting from Skubala last week, him saying that he was actually loving the opportunity to get involved like this. And I think that's absolutely genuine. But you will know that there's a lot of pressure on this. And I think it might well feel very different to him this week in comparison to how it felt last week. Because last week it felt like holding the reins for a few days. This week it feels as if it could be him to the end of the season.
From what you said about his training, is it fair to say he's trying to bring clarity in moments?
Clarity in moments. Moments. Well, celebrate moments.
Well, my
yes.
My mischievous follow-up to that, Phil, was going to be along similar lines. And I was going to ask, do you think that he's simplifying the message because the message they were receiving previously was perhaps not as clear or as simple as might have been liked?
I think that would probably be an easy grenade to throw. But you would have to say that towards the end of, well, I actually think for quite a lot of this season, the tactics and the strategy Marsh was using were not working in the way that they needed to. And I think the second half at Forest, which did seem to be influential in the eyes of the board, you know, that was what seemed to cap it for Leeds. Although, again, I suspect it would have been very difficult for them to overlook how toxic it was in the away end, the fighting amongst the fans, the chanting and everything else. There does come a point, you know, where it's a red line and you have to, you got to draw a line in the sand. But yeah, I don't think, and he said last week, Skubala, that he hadn't diverted massively away from Marsh's ideas or the way in which Marsh had set the team up. And I suspect that's probably because it's risky to try and do that, you know, in the thick of a season when you've got games every few days and you don't have a lot of time to coach or to train the players. You can't deviate wildly. But I think, as I say, a lot of the talk has been about simplification and trying not to overcomplicate what's being said and what's being planned and what's being done on the pitch. But I mean, this is a, you know, I think, I don't know if you can really call the Manchester United games free hits, because somewhere along the lines, you've got to pick up points. But this is a big test, Everton away. You know, this is going to be a really, really close examination of how good Skubala is tactically, how good he is at changing things in game, and how good he is delivering when the chips are down. Because with the exception of Southampton the following weekend, they might not be down in a much bigger way than this game many more times.
It's funny, isn't it? You're saying then about Skubala holding the reins. It's almost like you've been given a kid to babysit for an evening, maybe even stay overnight, and then suddenly they're moving in with you for a few weeks. It's like, I'm supposed to give them back after they've slept over for one night. How do you think he approaches the rest of the season, Phil?
Probably much in the same way as he's approached this week. I don't dig up that horrible cliche of game to game. That's really how it is, isn't it? I mean, you can't really do much. There's no transfer window now. There's no scope to change the squad. The team is as it is. He's got the players he's got. It's going to have to be a case of deal with Everton, deal with Southampton, go from those games. As I say, if those games do not go to plan, I think it will be difficult for Leeds to stick as they are. You know, I think if they do, then they'll confidently sit and say, right, okay, you know, Skubala's got us. He can keep us going to the end of the season and he can keep us up. But if they're not in good health after those two matches, then they might well have to think again. But from his perspective, I don't think he can do any more than that, than just go week to week. And I don't think any of us can expect any more of him than that at all. He is It's not that he's got no coaching background. I mean, he absolutely does. Some of it was obviously in futsal, but, you know, going back to earlier stages of his career, he's been at other clubs at academy level. This is new for him, though. This is front and centre in a way that he hasn't experienced before. And we are going to find out in quite a big way about him. I said previously, I find him quite intriguing, actually. I do feel from sitting listening to him and looking at him and looking at the football so far that there does seem to be something there. But let's not pretend this division isn't massively cutthroat.
And final thought then, Phil, are you going to be sorry to not get Jesse Marsh back in the press room at Elland Road in a few days' time?
It would have been quite the event, that. And as of early Wednesday, it was looking like it might well happen. I don't think it would have been the most the most festival-like day you've ever seen. It would have been somewhat toxic, and there'd have been a hell of a lot to discuss as well, a hell of a lot to ask, a hell of a lot to chat over. But it doesn't seem like it's happening, and I kind of have a feeling that's probably for the best.
Right, Phil, thank you for your time. Go back to your week off.
Thank you very much.
And enjoy the game at the weekend. We'll pick it up on Monday, yeah, you and I?
Yeah, I certainly will. Certainly will. It's a biggie. It's a biggie.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
One bit of news we got before today's press conference commenced, half an hour before that kicked off, was the contract extension for Luke Ayling. Obviously, he's a huge favourite. I mean, to quote Scubala on him, all the players are important, but Luke's a great person. He's very professional, a great leader, and a bit of a legend at the club. It's an important moment. He was brilliant in the two games against Man United.
It's been a useful reminder as this past week that he still has something to offer. I feel like there was maybe a feeling towards the end of last season that it was time to move on from him, and I guess the signing of Rasmus Christensen could well have been that, had he got himself established. But actually, he's proven himself to be our best right back still at this stage.
Yeah, I do wonder actually on that whether, because there was this shift over to Marsh and the Red Bull style of football, and Christensen came in, if there was almost a behind the scenes decision that it was time to move on from the promotion team, that perhaps they hadn't replaced them quite quick enough, and Luke Ayling just kind of fell under that broad umbrella.
Possibly, yeah. I think Marsh obviously knew Rasmus as well. And I can see that on paper, at least, his all-action style did fit with Marsh's, because he didn't ever show signs of being a particularly complex footballer in his starts for us, didn't Christensen, which is maybe because of the way we were set up. Whereas when you see Ayling play, for all of his faults, he always seems to be looking to make a pass. He's not an up-the-line man. He cuts in field, he progresses the ball, he gets on the end of things. I don't know, it feels like he's a more independently minded footballer in some respects.
Yeah, and even like when he was at fault with the goals against Man United, both home and away, because you could argue he was involved in them because they came from down his side. It looked to me, and this is not making excuses for him, but it looked to me like he was only ever sort of marginally out of position. And we know it's a game of fine margins, isn't it? It's the Premier League, you get punished so so easily. You step a yard or two too much in one direction and you can get yourself caught very, very easily. I mean, you saw the speed at which Garnacho cut in from the left in that home game. Whereas those kind of individual moments were not reflected at the goals we were conceding earlier in the season. And this is not a criticism of Christensen necessarily, but it felt like there were far greater structural issues previously and the fullback might be caught right up the field and then they attack down that side. Whereas with Luke Ayling, it's perhaps just moments where he's been outpaced or just gone a yard or two in the wrong direction.
And I think
am I being fair there? I don't know.
Possibly. I mean, the ball to the back post was a thing regardless of personnel, wasn't it? It was a way to score against us. So it did end up making a fullback look silly quite often because you were stood centrally while someone was in behind you. But it did seem to be just the way we set up. I think the thing with Ayling in recent games is you can almost accept him being tired late in a game because we've asked such a huge amount of him to that point. Like, he is, weirdly, for a right back, we've started a lot of our attacks through there, which we used to do under Bielsa. That was one of the famous Pablo goal at Swansea. That started with Ayling, didn't it, on that right-hand side, making a run forward. So he has to do a lot more, partly because we've not had a left back as well. So we've been putting an awful lot on Luke Ayling for a lot of years. And in the main, you have to say he's delivered a huge amount to us.
Interested to hear Scobaro talking about his role within the club, not necessarily on a football inside, but you know, setting an example about behaviours and stuff like that and guiding the young players through. And it feels like, because we're in a moment of transition now, it still feels like we haven't quite figured out what we're doing post-Bielsa, but you get the sense that maybe, I don't know, the next manager who is appointed full-time will perhaps be a proper moving on from that. So we're still in a transitional phase and I think we need a little bit of consistency. We need these what he calls the leadership group, maybe to see us through this transition and just keep the dressing room in a particular place. You know, I think you can change too much too soon, as much as you might argue that some of these players have needed replacing. Too much change can be a bad thing.
And Luke Ayling is not an old man either. I think sometimes that because he's been here for such a long time and he was part of a group which we, I suppose he seems to be included in a group which includes Pablo and Berardi and that generation. But 31, you've got several years left in you. You know, some look at, you know, someone like Dani Alves, he's playing right back till he's 40 or whatever. You know, there is still a footballer in there. And I don't think he seems to have got particularly slower in the last few years. I think last year he was carrying injury for a lot of the season as well, which kind of helped him. But I don't look at the Luke Ayling now and think he has declined massively physically from 3 years ago. So he's got to be worth keeping around. I doubt he's a particularly high earner. And if he can fill in a couple of different positions, he's not going to let you down around the club doing, like, in terms of training and stuff. He's someone who, I dare say, in a year or two, if he's still here and he's on the bench, he probably won't cause any problems either. So just a useful person to have around.
Do you reckon, like, pound for pound, he's the best value signing we've had in the modern era? You'd probably put Pablo in there as well, I dare say. But
I mean, there's a few of the Bielsa
players, you know, like 200 grand or whatever
era you could have in there. Yeah, but you got Pablo Dallas, we didn't pay a huge amount for. Click as well was quite a bargain. So there are lots of people you could fit into the same category. In some ways, you view all of those Bielsa players who were already here in sort of the same bracket, even in terms of someone who didn't play as crucial a part. And obviously, it was gone by the time we were established in the Premier League. But Berardi, I know he didn't play in the last season, but he's someone who you looked at the time and you thought, well, he's arrived on the cheap. Early impressions, he's fine. But you didn't expect very much of, and I guess Ayling's always been part of that as well, that he was part of the renaissance under Bielsa. And as much as maybe long term we're gonna want a better replacement, I sort of still want Luke Ayling at right back because he makes me feel happy.
Yeah, I was going to say, is the sentiment in that, and are we wrong to use sentiment as a reason to renew contracts? Because there are people, you know, we always say you can't take Twitter as gospel, but the argument for him to keep him is quite clear. Some of it possibly is rooted in sentiment. The argument for getting rid of him is he's outstayed his welcome. He's too old. He's past it now. So where do you think sentiment feeds into that?
Or is he just going to go to Roma? Have we propped up his value for this? If it was a 4-year contract, I would raise some eyebrows. But it's a year's extension, isn't it? It's not much of a risk at this stage. I think it's more of a risk to let someone like Ayling go and have to replace him in the transfer market than it is to just keep someone of his standing. Because to buy any kind of a Premier League footballer, you're looking at, I mean, of our signings this summer and into January, I don't think any of them have been less than £8 or £9 million, have they?
Yeah. So you're talking comfortably 10 million at least, maybe 15 for someone decent, and then probably 20 to 25 if you're going to start properly getting to the next level in terms of signing.
So for the cost of giving Ayling another year, I think it's an obvious thing to do. I don't know why it didn't happen sooner. I don't know if...
That's what I wondered about with the question about whether there'd been kind of a policy decision almost to move things on into the next era, and they were trying to sort of hurry that along, and they'd sort of seen the old guard, the promotion team, as kind of dispensable, needing replacing now. And actually, because we've now said no to the Red Bull model and Marsh is gone, whether there's just a little bit more, take a step back, take stock of what we actually have and the value that they bring. And, you know, you can't ignore recent performances, can you, that he's been good. So if you can do that against Man United, then I'm sure, you know, he's worth that extra year, because it's not right long, is it?
No, and I think last summer when we signed Christensen, there was maybe one eye on this being Ayling's last season. Whereas now you look at it and you're thinking, well, if it's going to be anyone's last season, it might be time to move Rasmus on, because he's not got established. He's not played brilliantly in any games. He's not played as well in any games as Luke Ayling has played in the last two games, has he? That's the thing. It's good that they're willing to change plans, I suppose. It's if we're going to give the club some credit, or we can chuck them under the bus for trying to get out some feel good information while everyone's while everyone's pissed off with the board. Because there's a little bit of me slightly suspicious of that side of stuff too.
But. Oh, naturally. Does actually beg a question about what it means for Cody Drama.
Yeah, I mean...
Does he spend a year out on loan? Does he move on in the summer? Because his contract's ticking down, isn't it?
Yeah, he's into his last year. The end of next season, he'll be out of contract.
Same as Ayling. Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what goes on there. Because he seems to have done incredibly well on his loan spells. And in admittedly fairly limited first-team chances for us... Never really done it, has he?
Mm. Does he need it? That's what I wonder. Is it a case of saying to him, right, we'll extend your contract if you're prepared to sign one. This is the plan. We stick you out on loan for a year. You go get a full season under your belt. Then you come back ready to go for the season after.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's when you step into the first team squad properly. Or is that... Because it feels like...
From his point of view, yeah. I just wouldn't believe them.
No.
Because I think that he's been touted as... First as Ayling's understudy, and then he went out on loan, did well at Cardiff. So, Jesse Pivac was saying, well, come back. We definitely want you as part of the squad. We believe in you. Still didn't play him.
Mm.
So if I was Cody Drama, I think I would be inclined to take a move if it was offered to me. I mean, obviously, the options for him might not be great. I mean, he was linked with both Newcastle and Borussia Dortmund before signing on loan for Luton. So maybe some of the hype has been a little bit too much at times, or the agent has tried to get him... maybe get him involved more at Leeds, or get him a better move at points. But the reports from Luton are very good at the moment, as they were from Cardiff. But then again, it is quite a big step up in terms of the standard of football and the expectation.
Just returning to the point of Ayling as well, I think probably one of the best things you can say about him as a character is that, don't you feel like you want to be his mate?
Yeah, definitely.
Like when it comes to the passing the pint test, would you go for a pint with him? He's one of the first ones you'd pick out of the squad, isn't he?
Yeah, 100%. And I think some of the moments we've had with him as well, from the really good ones, like the Huddersfield goal, to be his part in Pablo, to seeing him involved in all the celebrations, you also think to him at Forest and looking completely dejected, and he seems to still be the bloke that they send out to face the cameras when everything's gone to shit, which is quite endearing, I suppose, that he's the one who, whether or not he's forced to do it, or he sticks his hand up and says, like, you know what, fine, I'll do it.
My turn then, is it?
I'm experienced enough to handle this. But yeah, personality-wise, I think he's great. And we've had so many great moments with him, and fun moments too.
And the word legend is bandied around far too frequently in football, but he's definitely a legend in the modern sense of the word, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. He's
achieved something.
Yeah, he's achieved something, and he was part of the before, he was part of the after of Bielsa. So I think it's, he'll always be someone who is fondly remembered at the club. And in some ways, I'm just glad we're keeping him so someone else can't have him. Because
you'd be sad seeing him in another kit, wouldn't you?
I would. I don't think I'd like to see him going off and having a few good years at Middlesbrough and them enjoying him. It'd be a shame.
Yeah. I kind of want him to be one of those players who decides at the end of his Leeds contract, whenever that may be, like, do you know what, lads? I'm just going to stick around in Yorkshire. I had my kids here. They're settled in school. I'll just stay in Harrogate and keep showing up, and he's there on the photos, you know, becomes an ambassador for the club, whatever it might be.
We're basically not letting him leave.
Yeah, we like him too much. Well, I think we've safely navigated the whole show.
A bit of Frank Lampard's managed to creep in, but, not too bad.
Hopefully the Athletic won't be too upset. But yeah, Phil will be back on the show on Monday morning when we debrief Everton, when he's back to work. At The Phil Hayes Show on Twitter, theathletic.com/Leeds pod, if you want to read Phil's stuff and interact with him as well. We will be back on Monday. Thanks for joining us for this one. We'll see you in a bit.
The Phil Hayes Show.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.